before all the things were gone. I worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Indeed. Hey, that's Lee Greenwood. Couldn't have said it better, Lee. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy Big Ed Davis, who came up with that song, we thank you so much for joining us. It is the start of a Memorial Day weekend, is it not? It's Friday, May the 26th. We are so glad you are with us. We have a lot to talk about. In a few minutes, Jessica Malugin of the Competitive Enterprise Institute will join us. We're going to talk about whether or not social media should be regulated to protect young people. Now, the Surgeon General says there's not enough evidence that social media is safe for kids. So what does he want us to do? Let's find out what Jessica has to say in a few minutes. And have you heard about this? Target stores have apparently partnered with a group that advocates letting children get sex transition surgery without their parents knowing about it. Now, that's hard to believe, but we're gonna look into it. So stay tuned for that as well. And more bad news for Joe Biden, this time coming from what would normally be a friend, coming from a CNN poll. And we'll give you the details on that. And in our ultimate top 10, with what's going on these days, the top 10 cities with the worst retail crime, the worst. Towards the end of the show, we'll tell you about that. So, the Oath Keepers founder, his name is Stuart Rhodes. Have you ever heard of Stuart Rhodes, Ed? Do you know anything about the Oath Keepers at all? Well, anyway, he's been sentenced to 18 years in the slammer following a seditious conspiracy conviction. Now, this all involves the January 6th.
Yeah, the Great Insurgent.
The Great Insurgents, the January 6th riot. This is the first sentence handed down to anybody convicted of seditious conspiracy related to January 6th. And it represents the longest sentence that's been given to anybody in that break-in. Now, government prosecutors had been looking to sentence this guy to 25 years. But 18 years is an awful lot. They say he was the architect of a plot to forcibly disrupt the transfer of presidential power that included, quote, quick reaction force, unquote, teams at a Virginia hotel to ferry weapons into D.C. if they were needed. So this guy sounds like a kook, if that's what
I was going to say.
Go ahead.
I don't care what party you are.
Exactly.
If you're trying to take over a government building like that with force,
right,
you have to give him the maximum penalty.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah. Here's what the judge said. Mr. Rhodes, you've been convicted of a seditious conspiracy. You're a lawyer. You understand what that means. Among the most serious crimes an individual American can commit, an offense against the people of our country. And what was the motive? You didn't like the new guy. That's what the judge said. He said, just because somebody supported the former president, doesn't mean they're a white nationalist. Mm. Your only regret was you thought you should have brought the weapons, and if you had, you would have hung Nancy Pelosi from a lamppost, the judge said. The judge said it's clear that Rhodes, quote, wants democracy in this country to devolve into violence. He says the moment you're released, whenever that may be, you will be ready to take up arms against your government. What we absolutely cannot have is a group of citizens prepared to take up arms in order to foment a revolution, and that's what you did. In remarks shortly before the sentence was handed down, Rhodes slammed the prosecution as politically motivated, noting that he never went inside the Capitol and insisted he never told anybody else to do so. He, quote, I'm a political prisoner, and like President Trump, my only crime is opposing those who are destroying our country. So,
well, when I
that was a pretty tough sentence, wasn't it?
When I say he should be locked up, period, I would assume that they have proper evidence to to back that up, and not the hearsay
apparently they did, ferrying in the guns and all that kind of thing, right? And if he was guilty of getting guns in there, that's pretty damning evidence.
What he did, what was about to do, is no better than some when there's an incident and then we have riots in the street where people want to be judge, jury, and executioner. Yeah. That's why we have a judicial system, and it's allowed to go through.
Of course. I wonder if Trump were to become president, I wonder if he would pardon that guy.
I believe he was asked that question, and he said he would have to look into the circumstances.
Okay,
he doesn't know.
That's probably a good answer.
I mean, just because the guy wanted to defend Trump doesn't mean he should get out.
Exactly.
If he was cuckoo and, like you said, trying to take over the Capitol with guns and stuff, then no, absolutely not.
Yep, that's what it sounds like to me, too. Did you hear about this 9-0 vote by the Supreme Court on the EPA Waters Rule? This really ticked off Chuck Schumer, the Democratic Senate Majority Leader. He slammed the court's ruling yesterday that limited the EPA and its ability to regulate bodies of water. He called it a MAGA court, even though the vote was 9-0. They're not all MAGA judges, Chuck. I got news for you.
Damn you, make America great
is
again,
Elena
people.
Is Elena Kagan a MAGA judge?
I don't know.
Huh? I don't think so. The High Court issued an opinion that narrowed the EPA's definition of waters of the United States. The court said that the government must define what they call waters of the United States as a water source with a continuous surface connection to major bodies of water. It upended an attempt by the Biden administration to regulate wetlands, lakes, ponds, streams, and other, quote, relatively permanent waterways, those that don't feed, you know, rather easily into an ocean, in other words, which had relied on a broad reading of the EPA's authority. Now, we've had people on, as you know, down through the years, from a particular organization that used to back people that had wetlands on their property and were trying to stop government from telling them that they had to do this and they had to do that regarding the water that was on their property. I mean, there were some of the most ridiculous rules that these people were being subjected to.
We had a case of a mega yacht somewhere in South Florida that they were, because it was a houseboat, they wanted them to pay rent on the water it sat on.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy stuff. So it was 9-0. I mean, Chuck, what are you talking about, buddy? 9-0.
Oh, it was a close vote.
Yeah, very close. All right. Well, we're going to talk about the Surgeon General when we come back. Jessica Malugin is going to join us from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Whether or not social media should be regulated more to protect young people.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We're back. Hey, the beginning of Memorial Day weekend. A lot of people are going to be on the road. Be very careful out there, people. And we're delighted to have back Jessica Malugin, and she's an old friend. She is the director of the Center for Technology and Innovation at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We're going to talk about the Surgeon General. He's issued an advisory earlier this week about the risks of social media on the mental health of young people. Well, that sounds like a fair concern. Jessica, welcome back. So the Surgeon General thinks that there is not enough data, apparently, to show that social media is totally safe for young people. I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure. What does he mean by that?
There's not quite enough data to show that lots of things are totally 100%
exactly
safe, and we press on driving our cars.
There you go.
And having a drink with dinner or whatever. You've correctly identified that this is sort of what we call the precautionary principle at work, meaning you can't go forward with anything unless you can prove that it's completely safe. Well, of course, you know, society would grind to a halt, and we can't really do that.
I wouldn't go out of my house.
Or stay in it.
You're right.
Right.
Where the hell am I going to go?
Yes, the reality of the world being full of trade-offs is not on display here in this advisory. That being said, of course, I think most reasonable people agree that too much social media for the wrong person at the wrong age is not a good idea. But I think also, I hope that most of us can agree that parents are the ones who should be making that decision about how much is too much, what age it works for your kid, and there's just sort of no shortcut for that. So I think, once again, it's not that there might not be a problem, it's that this problem might not have a policy solution. This might be a parental solution.
Yeah, and like you say, you know, coming up, doesn't he have anything better to do? I mean, if we had come up with something that, you know, definitely shows that we're poisoning the mind of kids, you know, on social media, okay, let's go and, discuss that. But to say, you know, we can't really prove that it's totally safe when you get on, social media. And it's very hard anyway. Let's be honest. Even if they passed a ton of laws, and there's a good case to be made that the federal government has no business doing it, but whatever governmental entity wants to pass a slate of laws limiting the use by young people, just trying to enforce it becomes a major problem.
That's exactly right. And, you know, one of the ways where you could effectively enforce it has its own problems. And that's that everyone online, to prove that they are not a minor, has to provide age verification, which could mean your credit card or your government ID. And, of course, that creates a whole new world of privacy questions, issues, and potential problems, right? Because these companies then have to store that information in case they get accused later of not age verifying. So now you have the kind of databases that, you know, while the right hand of government's worried about kids being online, the left hand is worried about privacy.
Mm-hmm.
But you're creating these databases that are the very concern. There's a lot of unintended consequences with trying to fix what again, I really think it's not that it's not a problem and not a problem for some kids. And I'm a parent, I understand it's not fun to be the backstop and be the one that just says no. But I think ultimately that's our best solution here. There's really no replacement for parents being emotionally tuned in and present even with what their kids are doing online. And I will say, there are a number of wonderful tools that parents can employ, and all of these platforms that you know your kids are on, YouTube, Instagram, all of these things, TikTok, all have tools that they've made available to parents to help control the amount of time and the content that kids see. I think that, you know, as a parent, I mean, I get it. I'm tired. I'm lazy. I understand. I don't want to go figure it out. But I think it's really worth it to spend 10 minutes on these websites figuring out how you can come back into more control of what your kids are being exposed to online. I think it's a much better solution than sacrificing anonymous speech and everyone's privacy. You know, and like you said, and the bottom line is kids are going to find a way around it anyway, probably. So there's no shortcut.
We're talking with Jessica Malugin. She is the director of the Center for Technology and Innovation at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we're talking about Dr. Vivek Murthy, I believe it's pronounced, the Surgeon General, who, by the way, I haven't seen much of him. Of course, there's so much going on these days, but he's been sort of in the background. There used to be this guy that was quite prominent. I can't remember his name now, but he was under Ronald Reagan. And he would come out wearing this like military uniform. He had a beard. He was a very distinguished looking guy. And he would be out there, and he was very conservative also. But he was out there all the time to talk about this, that, and the other thing. Became very well known. But anyway, as you say, and you know, the thing about the government, it never does it well anyway if it gets involved in trying to regulate. The free market, and like you say, these websites, these platforms, they can come up with better standards. They've got, and parent, there is parental controls. There is parental controls on these computers that these parents, you know, can take advantage of. I just don't see how the federal government can do it better.
Yeah, well, I mean, I too long for the days of C. Everett Koop, who I believe
that's
is
him.
General,
thank right. you.
Yes.
Very good.
No problem. Thank you. We all remember his weird sort of military dictator uniform.
Yes.
But yes, I can see it. As soon as you said it, it came into my mind.
He looked like a good humor man that had been raised in rank or something like that, with that white
shirt. Yeah, it had kind of a Love Boat captain happening. Anyway, it all blurs together, my
there
problem.
You go.
But yeah, that's exactly right. Like, there's nothing new under the sun here, right? The government doesn't do very many things very well, and the more you give them to do, the more problems you usually end up making. And unfortunately, kids on social media is no exception to that. As we move forward in technology, these challenges are going to come up. This is certainly a challenge for a lot of parents and a lot of kids, although I will say that I think there's a lot of benefits for a lot of kids with being online, too. And this is a time when we, as parents, need to be educating our kids about making good decisions, helping them grow and learn online, because as adults, they're not going to be able to just be off the grid in this way, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want a job, if you want to see the news, if you want to participate in society, there's going to be some amount of your life that will probably be online.
Yeah.
So let's build some good habits. Let's learn about moderation and responsible use of these platforms now, because just to chuck it over to the government, I mean, how many times do we have to learn? It doesn't work, right? And we know that's true with choices in schools. We know that's true with, you know, kids' diets and what they should eat and what they should be parents are the ones that should be making those decisions.
Yeah.
And there's no exception to that just because we're talking about things that are online.
Now, I will say, as an older person, that it does scare me that the young people are so welded to their computers and to their little iPhones. And wandering around, you know, grasping them, you know, it's more, it's almost like it's a part of their hand. And it doesn't seem, you know, to me to be, it's a rather unhealthy habit. The trick is, and you mentioned moderation. I don't know how easy it is to be able to do that, but if there was some way that we could get these kids weaned off of all of the time that they spend on these things, I think we might be a little bit better off.
You know what? I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm all for it. I know, and I am not a minor. Far from it. I'm on my phone too much because I'm a parent and I have work and everything else. We all could put that down a little bit more and interact. But, you know, I think, again, there's a learning curve. Social media is so ubiquitous, it feels like it's been around forever. But, of course, it's a relatively new phenomenon, and we're learning about where those healthy boundaries are. And I agree, put your phone down and go for a walk. Have a conversation with your kid. I'm all for it. But I don't need the federal government to tell me that.
No,
we figured it out right here all on our own.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right. No, I do not want them to be. Now, you know, it's always interesting that our founding fathers basically wanted as limited a federal government as we could get. They were all about giving everybody as much freedom and personal responsibility as they could give them. You know, it was their idea that, for instance, the states should have a much stronger involvement with the people than a centralized government. And if we could kind of keep that in mind and allow people that freedom, I think in the long run, we kind of find our way, you know? I mean, we're not stupid. Well, we have the capacity to understand the obstacles that are, you know, that we have, and we don't need an adult child relationship with the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if we're starting from the premise, all of us here together in this great big republic experiment, with the idea that people are intelligent enough to self-govern, then we can't turn around and say, oh, but I don't think you should be in charge of how much time your kid spends on Instagram. You're too stupid to do that. I mean, that's sort of ridiculous, right? I mean, if we are thinking, reasoning, mostly rational, if sometimes emotional, voters in this country, then we should be leaving smaller decisions about our kids, especially, to individuals, right? We don't even need to get into federal versus state for me with that. It's just that these are decisions that each family should make for themselves. There's the tools to allow them to make it. It's not always easy, depending on the kid and the circumstance, but that doesn't mean that we give up that freedom and that liberty just because, you know, some people want to be in control of it and think that they know better for us than we do.
Yeah,
I just sort of reject that premise.
Jessica has penned a piece that you can find, by the way, in the Washington Examiner, effort to limit children's social media access draws bipartisan support in the Senate from a few days back. But you mentioned in that article that Senator Tom Cotton and Senator Katie Britt, both Republicans, have joined two Democrats, Brian Schatz and Chris Murphy, to sponsor something called Protecting Kids on Social Media Act. So what do you think of that act?
You know, I certainly always proceed with the idea that everyone's intentions are good. And I think, you know, their parents, and like many parents, they're concerned about how much time and what kids are seeing online. I get that. But again, this just isn't the solution. There's so much you would have to sacrifice in terms of every American, not just kids, every American having to prove that they're not a minor. So much privacy you're sacrificing. It just certainly can't be the solution to this problem.
Right.
And it's a shortcut. And I think it's probably a politically popular one on the right because it's sort of beating up on big tech. And it's popular on the left because the left believes that the government should tell you what to do all the time.
You're right.
So, you know, that there's your bipartisan explanation. I just, you know, I keep it old school, and I just say, you know, this is a decision for individuals, this is a decision for families, and people like Tom Cotton would understand that if we were talking about school choice or a number of other issues. So, again, I just don't think that there's an exception because, you know, we happen to be talking about some companies that some of us might disagree with their politics.
Right. But even in your article, you make note of the fact that it looks like it's going to be harder and harder for the parents to kind of retain that autonomy when you got states like Arkansas, California, and Utah who have passed some restrictions on access on social media to go along with other states that are considering it. And there's a bunch of other states like Texas, of all places, and Ohio and Maryland and a bunch of others. So are we losing the battle for freedom on this one?
You know, I think it's a rough spot on the tech front, right? We're a lot of people on the right are toiling with the idea of, oh, you know, is this so new and so different that we don't need to stick to our limited government principals. You know, are we really in a position where we can't afford to be principled? You know, I disagree. I think that that's, what are we saving? What are we fighting for if we throw over our principles here? But the state question is one that, you know, it's tricky for conservatives because in general they are looking to devolve power from the federal government at least to the states. It's closer to the people, and that's a good impulse. But in the case of interstate commerce, which if the global internet is an interstate commerce, I don't know what is, you know, we've written that into the Constitution to say you can't start building a 50-state patchwork of regulatory schemes because it makes it incredibly difficult for anyone to do business. And what ends up happening is it's cheaper for the companies to comply with the most stringent regulations. So they end up complying with the most harsh state. And then what you have, that's how you get states like New York and California who basically export their regulatory regimes to everyone because, you know, medium businesses can't afford to comply with 50 different regulatory environments. So they pick the hardest one, and they say that hopefully that keeps us out of court.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's not how this is all supposed to work. We have a interstate commerce clause that says, no, that's none of your business, states. You need to stay out of that. So we'll have to see what happens on the federal front to see if that gets pushed back on.
Jessica, do you mind taking a question from my colleague, Ed Davis?
Pleasure.
Well, I just wanted to say, Jessica, on a more serious note, what are we going to do about dogs and cats that have their own Facebook page?
Well, I mean, you might have stumbled upon something that there is a policy solution for. You might have me tempted. We should at least have congressional hearings. How about that?
We don't want to influence our dogs and cats. Are they also...
Jessica, you laugh, but you know the right is going to come up with that at one point.
Nothing surprises me anymore, you guys.
If I see a... You know, if I see a Cocker Spaniel walking down the street with an iPhone in one paw, I'm going to be very concerned about it.
Cocker Spaniels
have more. Yeah, call me if you see that.
Cocker Spaniels have more likes than you do, bud.
They are cute.
Oh, you're right. Jessica, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so very much for your input on this really quite important topic.
Thank you guys so much. Happy long weekend.
And the same to you, dear. Jessica Balogian, all right, Competitive Enterprise Institute. Very good. All right, let's go take our break. When we come back, this is really scary, Target stores. Apparently, they partnered with a group that advocates letting children get sex transition surgery without even their parents knowing about it.
If I can hold you, then let me squeeze. My heart goes round and round. My love will tumble me down. You... Breathless.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hello there, Tampa Bay. This is former NFL and college football coach Jimmy Johnson. Listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can sure use the attention.
And this is former Major League Baseball player, Hall of Famer Wade Boggs. I also hope you listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They can darn sure use the money.
Hi there. This is Marine Wildlife Artist and Conservationist Dr. Guy Harvey. Please listen to the Kelly Kelly Show every Monday starting at 5 p.m. They need to feel worthy.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune in to the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back, Freedom Works, and we thank you so very much for being with us. So, you know, Target stores. You know, they've been in the news an awful lot recently, have they not? Are they the same ones that are locking up their... Am I confusing that?
We were discussing them on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Remember I told you that all the Target stores had moved all their transgender pride and everything right as you walked in the door, so you tripped over it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, now the Target Corporation apparently is partnering with a K-12 education group, which focuses on getting districts to adopt policies that'll keep parents in the dark on their kids' in-school gender transition. Also providing sexually explicit books to schools for free. This is the group, the K-12 group. And integrating gender ideology at all levels of curriculum in public schools. The group is called GLSEN, I guess it is. I'm not sure what that stands for. It leads the movement in creating what's called affirming and anti-racist spaces for LGBTQIA+. They keep adding, by the way, letters to the group, LGBTQ. Whoa. Now there's IA and then plus. That'll eventually we'll cover everybody that way,
and
I guess.
I was always told, at least when I was growing up, you couldn't call somebody queer because that was a slang.
It was.
But now it's a thing. I mean,
they call themselves queer. There are queer people, and they call themselves queer.
I guess if they can,
I'm not sure what's the difference between that and being a homosexual.
I don't know.
It used to be that if you were queer, it meant that you were homosexual.
I guess.
Anyway, it says here. Said the following. GLSEN leads the movement in creating affirming and anti-racist spaces for LGBTQIA+ students. We are proud of 10-plus years of collaboration with GLSEN and continue to support their mission. But this group, GLSEN, calls for gender ideology to be integrated into all classes, even math. Yeah, that's where you really need it, is in math. How am I going to be able to figure out my checking account if you don't integrate all of this gender ideology into it for me? Otherwise, no, I won't be able to understand how much money I got. So let's see. In another example, GLSEN recommended the teachers intervene if students are making graphs about sex and gender to ensure it includes the ideology supported by GLSEN. Oh, boy. What's going on here? If I were Target, I'd get the hell out of this stuff. Boy, well, you're just going to anger at least half the people out there.
This might be putting two and two together. Well, if they're part of this group, that's why they're selling merchandise.
It says here, to date, Target has donated at least $2+ million to them. Don't they know that? They must know. Target, I mean. The people that are donating money from Target, they must know.
Is it illegal or immoral?
Are they that stupid?
Is it illegal or immoral?
Well, it sounds immoral to me.
But immoral is not a crime.
No. It's stupid is what I mean.
Exactly.
You can donate to anybody you'd like.
You got CEOs that do stupid things all the time.
You can donate to anybody you would like. But, you know, it's going back to, it was not immoral for Bud Light to have a transsexual promoting their product. Yeah. But it's still, they're still hurting from it. So, anyway. Hey, listen to this. Poor old Joe Biden. You know, CNN is a safe landing zone, usually, for Joe Biden and his buddies.
It's a fight between that and MSNBC.
Who is it? Sean Hannity. MSDNC. Yeah. Anyway, CNN delivered horrible news for Biden as the network's latest polling shows a grim forecast ahead. The poll released yesterday says a whopping 66% of Americans view a Biden victory in the upcoming presidential election as either a disaster or a setback for the United States.
Well, welcome to the party, CNN.
I wonder how the CNN correspondent on the air at the time was reading that story, you know? Here's what they said. Jake Tapper, CNN anchor, quote, horrible news. Horrible for Joe Biden. Those are some bad numbers, he added later. The political director for CNN, David, Chalian, provided analysis of the poll that showed 41% of Americans specifically called Biden's win a disaster. 41%, a slightly better figure than the 44% who said the same about President Trump. However, another 26% of Americans viewed a Biden win as a setback, while just 12% said the same about a Trump win. Both frontrunners were tied at 27% among those who call each of their wins a step forward. But Trump held a 10-point lead over Biden on those who would call it a triumph. Anyway, so they were trying to compare Trump to Biden. And, of course, you know, if it's a CNN poll, you know Trump ain't going to do well in that. But it looks like Biden's doing at least as badly, if not worse.
Telling you, I don't think Biden makes it to the... He's got another year and a half.
He's going to take a long weekend. Meanwhile, the debt ceiling thing is hanging around.
But even...
The guy, you know, he's just... He's becoming totally useless. Although it's better to be useless than to be out there with his... degenerative, you know, running around trying to do things.
But look at the 2.5 years since he started, and what he is now. I mean, he's
deteriorated.
Progressively gotten worse,
noticeably so.
And it's not like it's going to slow down.
No, we got another. What is it?
I mean,
another year and a half almost, or at least another year and a half with this guy as president.
I mean, when is he going to? Not that he hasn't already embarrassed us, but when is he going to stand up in front of leaders and tell everybody he's got to go home because he's late for high school? I mean, you know, and just lose it.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, here's something that maybe we can credit the Biden administration for, Ed. The Biden administration held the first federal onshore oil and gas lease sale in nearly a year yesterday. The Bureau of Land Management, which is the agency responsible for leasing land, you know, for gas purposes, multiple use purposes, and it oversees nearly 250 million acres of public land. It's offered a total of 45 parcels across about 10,000 acres in New Mexico and Kansas. They auction off the land, you know.
So is this for drilling purposes?
Yes. Okay. For drilling and leasing purposes.
Now these
and then bids, you know, bids by the oil companies and energy companies.
These people that are so worried about the earth and everything, you know, there is no, I've looked and looked. I cannot see a plan or situation what we're doing with all these batteries.
Yeah, we talked about that, right.
You know, not only the cars alone with their 1,000-pound batteries.
What do we do with them?
But the everyday people that are using them for leaf blowers and weed whackers and lawn mowers, there's a big battery pack. And they only last a year or so.
Right.
Where are all these batteries going? How are we disposing them?
I don't know. Now, like locally, you know, don't you get these notices from the city that says, don't throw batteries and things like that into your garbage can?
Sure.
What you can do, though, is you can bring them to a particular site.
Okay.
Right? And you can drop them off. Now, the question is, all right, so you do that. What do they do with them?
Exactly. That's what I'm...
What do they take?
I'm wondering,
what do they
where take does it, them? How are they disposed of?
Yeah. Do they go over to the land dump anyway and throw it into the land when you're not looking?
They're the ones that toss it when you leave.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm worried about.
I mean, we're not talking about a couple of AA batteries here.
No.
I want to know what happens with those 1,000-pound batteries that are coming out of cars.
So tell me, when those things sit somewhere after their life and they you throw it out, would they start to leak stuff?
I don't know.
I think that's what happens, right?
I don't know.
I mean, that's the problem. They've got all of this pollutant stuff in them, right?
What was the late 80s, early 90s? We had a problem with tires.
Right.
And then we figured out that we could use tires, old tires, grind up as like a mulch.
Yeah.
The field turf that you
can
see at the Tropicana Field, the base.
You can recycle them.
Yes. Are we recycling batteries? I would just like to know.
Yeah, and maybe we can come up with a way of recycling whatever it is inside of the battery.
Because it's going to increase.
Right.
I mean, if Biden had his way, it would increase tenfold.
Yeah.
In 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. When they try to stifle one particular energy source, they're opening up a problem with another one.
I mean, look at the United States Postal Service.
Not like
all their trucks are going to go batteries. They're going to have a fleet.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. So anyway, they've opened this up. Let's see here. Here's a comment from one of the. Let's see. So the Bureau of Land Management, as I said, is leasing land in Kansas and in New Mexico. It sparked calls from the American Petroleum Institute, the largest oil and gas industry group, for the administration to follow federal law and hold more sales. Exactly. That's what we want. By the way, I noticed that Ron DeSantis mentioned that's one of the things he would do, is he would open up our drilling capacity much more than, that'd be one of the first things he'd want to do.
But what the sites that they're opening up, are they worth drilling?
Well, that's a good question. See, now, that's
they could be
thing.
The, I don't want to use the word I want to use,
it's
but
a
the,
gamble.
The crappy sites.
It could be a gamble. Yeah. And you don't know until you drill.
And then you can please the right and say, oh, listen, we're opening up while we're drilling.
Yeah.
We're drilling a dry hole, but we're drilling.
Yep. It says here the lease sale is the first of at least four federal oil and gas sales that the Bureau of Land Management has planned over the next month. So, well, maybe they're finally getting a little bit of religion. They're realizing that our purchasing energy product from places like Saudi Arabia and Venezuela and wherever else, Russia, wherever else we have to go, mm-hmm. is not a good idea.
No.
It's not really in the long run a good idea. All right. Anyway, let's take our final break. And when we come back, among other things, in our ultimate top 10, we're going to tell you the top 10 cities with the worst retail crime.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's TAN Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to TAN Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on TAN Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
I see the moon rising. Hey, we are back for the final segment of Freedom Works. By the way, we're going to take Monday off. It's Memorial Day. So you'll have to listen to one of our earlier programs if you'd like, which brings me to telling you that we are typically here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, on the great TAN Talk Radio Network. And we always appreciate that you would find time to listen to us live. But thanks to Ed, if you can't listen live, he's got all our shows on podcast. All you got to do is go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com, and look at the top there. There's other things on the website, but mainly it's an opportunity for you to find out a little bit about the show and also click on the podcast button. It opens up all of the shows that we've done in the past. Ed's got them all up there for you with the most recent shows at the top. And he also takes the time to list the guests that we have and the topic that we discuss with the guest and also our top 10. Bless his heart. OurFreedomWorks.com. Now, this is kind of scary and sad. The Biden administration is doling out taxpayer money through an anti-terrorism grant initiative to a university program that explicitly lumps the Republican Party as well as Christian and conservative groups into the same category as Nazis, according to the document. Now, a group called the Media Research Center, it's a conservative group, apparently obtained documents showing a Department of Homeland Security program meant to fight terrorism is funding a group whose work has targeted the American political right. It says here, according to MRC, the Media Research Center, this terrorism task force is engaged in an active effort to demonize and eliminate Christian, conservative, and Republican organizations using federal taxpayer dollars. what we have uncovered calls for criminal prosecution. The American people need to know those who are abusing their positions in the federal government will be held accountable for their criminal behavior. Now, the group, DHS's Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention Grant Program, that's a mouthful, they call it TVTP, provides funds to various public, private, and nonprofit institutions like universities and county governments to establish or enhance capabilities to prevent targeted violence and terrorism. And apparently the Biden administration has awarded 80 grants to TVTP, which is just around $40 million. So why would, in God's name, would they lump Christians and conservative Republican organizations in the same group that they would lump Nazis in? That's kind of scary. Anyway, there you go. All right. Before we go to our top 10, Ed, I thought I would ask you. First of all, I got to mention what's going on in the world of basketball and hockey, because
I'm taking a nap.
Did you know that? Yeah, I know you're not big enough. I got to tell you that the Florida Panthers are going to be in the Stanley Cup, and they will play either the Las Vegas Golden Knights or the Dallas Stars. Now, Dallas won last night to extend their chances. They are down 3-1, the first one to win 4 games. Mm-hmm. So it looks like Florida will play Las Vegas, which would be interesting because it would be two Sun Belt towns playing each other in what's normally considered a cold weather climate sport. The other thing is the Miami Heat are playing the Boston Celtics. It's now 3-2 for Miami, and they'll play the Denver Nuggets. In the finals. Okay, now I got past that. Is there anything we need to know about our beloved Tampa Bay Rays? Are they still in first place?
Still in first place, and just finished up a series with the Toronto Blue Jays taking 3 out of 4.
Oh, that's good. Is Toronto any good?
Yeah, well, they had to get past that game where they won. They squeaked. They barely lost 20-1.
Yes. That has to be horribly embarrassing. 20-1 loss.
Monty Kiffin, the old defensive coordinator for the Bucks, that great defense. I remember we got beat. We went to L.A. or Oakland, whatever. We got beat 38-0. And he said, Monty, what do you do with that? He says, well, when you get back, you look at the tape, and then you burn it.
That's right. What was that famous saying by the original coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
He had a great John McKay. He had many quotes.
How do you feel about your team's execution?
The execution of your offensive line. I'm in favor of it. I think the better one was the kicker that said he was nervous when McKay was on the field. He says, I don't know how to break it to him, but I plan on showing up to all the games.
He's good. He had to have a sense of humor because, as I remember it, the very first year, or one of the very first years, they didn't win any games at all.
He took a beating here,
too. They took a horrible beating. It took a long time.
So the Rays have the L.A. Dodgers in town for the weekend.
Okay.
So plenty of seats available.
Dodgers are always good.
Yeah, well, I think they're first in the NL.
In the National League. So should we get a good crowd, do you think?
I would think so. I mean, it's dropped off a little bit because it's the Blue Jays and those damn day games. People got to work, you know? The 1 o'clock games during the week?
No, they got to play night games.
Yeah, people got to work. Come on.
Why are they doing day games?
They only got about 9,000 for that game, but, you know.
Okay.
Oh, well.
All right. Okay, I'm going to give you some background on the top 10 cities with the most retail crime.
Okay.
It comes from the National Retail Federation. And believe it or not, they've only compiled the retail info through 2022, apparently. It says each year, the National Retail Federation surveys retail loss prevention and security executives about risks, threats, and vulnerabilities to their companies and the retail industry as a whole. This year's report was conducted in partnership with the Loss Prevention Research Council. So, supposedly, these are the cities that have the most crime. And I think you're going to find that the larger the city, the more the crime. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, that just seems to make sense here. All right, here we go. Number 10, Dallas-Fort Worth. Now, that's in Texas, but, you know, that's a large metro area. I mean, you just know there's going to be a lot of retail mm-hmm. crime. Number 9. I mean, we might as well just tell you it's a list of some of the biggest cities in the country. Number 9 is Atlanta. Mm. They've had a lot of crime in general there, but retail crime is really a bad one right now. Number 8. Well, number 8 is Seattle. We know how bad things are in Seattle. We see that on a regular basis. It's not just homelessness there. Remember when they had that period of time where they allowed... restricted police from entering a certain area.
Yeah, certain blocks were blocked off.
Remember that? Yeah. It was just absolutely the most ridiculous thing that you had ever heard of. Between Seattle and San Francisco, I don't know who it's got dumber people running their governments, I'll tell you. Number 7, Sacramento, California. That's the capital of the state, and things aren't going well there. Number 6, my old hometown, Chicago. We know about Chicago. People running wild in the streets there. All kinds of theft going on. I don't know. I hate to see that because there's some great stores, Marshall Fields and Saks and all of those stores down the Magnificent Mile. I just hate to see any
a lot of
that
them
kind
are
of trouble.
Pulling out.
I know they are. That's what I say.
Walmart pulled out of all of it.
And Walmart's pulling out. Number 5. Hey, Miami's number 5.
Miami?
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, downtown Miami.
Somebody stealing suntan lotion down there?
Well, they made it to number 5. That's pretty bad. There must be a lot of it going on. I don't hear as much from Miami as I do from some of these other places. But they're ranked number 5. Number 4. Keeps going with the big cities. Houston. I mean, you know, we know that things are bad in all the big cities. Actually, this is just a list of the biggest cities. Want to know the truth? Number 3. I don't know why this one is number 1, but it's New York is number 3.
Well, it's working on it.
It is, isn't it? Number 2. Here you go, San Francisco and Oakland.
There you go.
Well, you knew they were going to be up there. Everything is going wrong in San Francisco.
We had a guy
Everything's going wrong.
We had a guy that was from San Francisco on one of the shows yesterday that said, it's all media. Everything's fine out here in San Francisco.
Are you kidding? You know, the only thing they haven't had, God forbid, is an earthquake. Everything else has gone wrong there. All right, Ed. What big city haven't we named? Because that's what it is. We named New York. We named Chicago.
Well, it's got to be in Los Angeles.
That's it.
Yeah.
Los Angeles, as you would not be surprised to hear, is number one most retail crime going on. Ah, come on, man.
Congratulations, Governor Newsom.
There you go. All right, well, listen. We hope you have a wonderful and safe Memorial weekend. Don't forget what the reason for the Memorial Day holiday is all about. It's about those who gave their lives for our wonderful country. We'll be back on Wednesday of next week. And remember, freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
Listen.
And a happy Friday, Tampa Bay. Big Ed here on the Tam Talk Radio Network. Let's take a look at your Bay Area forecast. A bit cooler temperatures for the next few